What's up? Welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have Phuong Weng Duan here, also known as Mickey Jones. Mickey is a recent graduate from the University of Lincoln in the UK. She's recently been working as a barista by day, by day and by night, trying to work out how to break into the advertising industry. Welcome, Mickey.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. We're largely going to talk about an article that you wrote, or ideas you have that you documented in an article called Young, Broken, Hungry, How Can Advertising Improve the Way It Recruits Juniors After COVID-19? It's a piece that appears on Little Black Book, right? LBBonline.com. But before we get into that actual topic, why don't you give us a brief overview of your recent years and, you know, how did you get to this point that you even wanted to be in advertising?
When I was growing up, my mum really wanted me to pursue more like professional careers. So she wanted me to be a lawyer or a doctor. And my kind of like in between of that was business. And then when we studied more in business, when I was in college, I was introduced to the marketing side of it, as well as we did a research topic on activists. And then I looked into different like social charities, and they had like loads of different campaigns going on. And I was thinking to myself, like, oh, I'd love to do some sort of advertising for like socially good projects. I didn't know that creative advertising was a thing. I just assumed that it was all underneath marketing, which is kind of like analytical. Yeah, like lots of numbers, datas. And then I applied to Lincoln and I was meant to do marketing. And I turned up on the open day and I was meant to go to the marketing talk, but I got confused with like the advertising and the marketing like headlines they had. So I ended up in the creative advertising department. And then I was sitting down and they played like a showreel, and then it was loads of like all the creative adverts that were coming up. And I think in that moment, I literally felt like a lightning bolt hit me. And I was like, shit, like this is what I was looking for like my whole life. And I just didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And then ever since then, I've just been like finishing my degree, trying to network, doing my portfolio, trying to find a partner, found my partner, and then just saving up to try and like break my way into London.
Oh, London is so hard to break into. Why are you so aristocratic? What I love about that story is you turned an accident into advice for an industry you're not yet in. And this makes me think that you are perfectly suited for this industry. This industry is all about accidents and giving out advice. So I like these two A-based words. It's alliterative. It's potentially could be part of your biography whatever. What I'm saying is there's an interesting story in turning an accident into preemptive advice for an industry you're not even in. So it's very bold.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're suited for it. Tell me a bit about finding a partner. Do you feel that you really have to have one before you will even get looked at to get in?
Oh, definitely. Actually, that was going to be my next topic on like something that I potentially want to tackle as well in a follow-up article. But when I was in university, when you get to your final year, you have to partner up. And in the year, there was an odd number. I was away on the day to get my braces removed. So it was meant to be the happiest day of my life. And then I had a phone call off one of my course mates. And she was like, Mickey, just to let you know, half the year's partnered up in a panic after like one pair like went public. And then she told me who was partnered up. And then I realized that my top five in that moment was gone. And I only had like one or two options left. So I was crying in the car to my mom. I was like, oh my God, like, am I just rubbish? Is it just me? Like, how am I going to get through the final year just by myself? Like, I'm only like a writer. I'm not really like, into art direction. Like, what do I do? And my mom, being the Asian mom that she is, like, she like whipped my ass into gear. She was like, Mickey, get a hold of yourself. Like, you can do this. Like, you've learned English by yourself. Like, you got through school by yourself. Like, this is nothing. Like, you'll become better because of it. So I was like, yeah, like, I can definitely do this. And then when I was going to book crits in my final year, just to try and make connections before I finish university, I found it very, very difficult to find any agency that would willingly give a junior her first placement as a solo. I think I only found one or two agencies, but even then they were like, well, we'd rather have you with a partner first, do a couple of placements, and then, you know, since you've got more experience, then we can take you on as a solo.
Yeah.
So I went all through third year by myself, and I just felt like, well, not means both, but I think I did well for someone who didn't think there was like they were going to finish uni. Mm-hmm. And then I signed on to a single mingle like networking event for single creatives. And then I met my partner, Paige, on the night. But we didn't actually connect to each other until 3 months later. And then we found out that her partner was, she's also in my university, but she was 2 years above me. Yes, that was quite a big coincidence. And we've just been a partner since. But I do know that, like, when I was a solo and I was trying to find partners, and I've still keep in touch with people that I've become friends with now, they've been telling me that they've missed out on work just because they were solos. Yeah. And it is very tough to kind of break into it if you're a solo creative. In London, though, I don't think it's...
Oh, London! We're going to have to talk so much about London later, aren't we? Okay, let's hold on London. And you're saying that your mum didn't use this opportunity as a way to try to push you back into a law track or a medicine track
or something? No, I think it's... I think definitely it wasn't... If it wasn't for my stepdad, I don't think I'd, like, be able to pursue advertising as, like, much as I am now. Because he's British, so obviously he's been brought up, like, differently to... like my mum back in Vietnam. So in Vietnam, it is very traditional. You're very much like STEM subjects, you know, business, medicine, maths, whatever, like arts and that was just kind of elitist subjects. And like, you know, if you were rich or you had connections, then you can pursue those subjects. But if you're not, then like, forget it. Just like do, you know, become a banker, become like an office worker. And then I think, yeah, if it wasn't for him fighting my corner and then, yeah, me finishing the degree with what I had, I don't think she would have like... been happy.
Yeah, I think it's worth saying, like, you know, I know a lot of people have come up in more traditional family structures that have where the family tries to force a particular path on them. And also I hear a lot of stories about people who've wanted to follow a creative path, whether it's being a designer or a writer or something, mostly within the US, a little bit in Britain as well, where the parents almost reject the kids as they grow up because they're like, why aren't you doing something I understand, which might not even be like an elite profession. It could be like, why aren't you working on the farm with us? You think you're a designer? You're not a designer. And so choosing a creative career, first of all, you've got to actually realize that one exists. And a lot of people have a similar story to you where you're like, oh, I was doing this thing and I was like, hey, what's that over there? And why did nobody tell me about this until now? So there's this stumbling into it that a lot of people have, unless they've grown up in a family that is creatively oriented or where there's a parent who works in advertising. And then they often, if they don't have a family that's creatively oriented, they have to deal with potential rejection by choosing a creative career. There's a, do you hear those kinds of, did you hear those kinds of stories coming up through university?
Oh yeah, definitely. My friend, Zara, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention her name, but yeah, Zara, she comes from a Muslim background and she's also coming from a single parent family. So she actually has to like support her mum now. And out of everybody in the year, we were the only ethnic minorities in our year. Well, I mean, I would say probably in like the 3 years we were at university. And she was the one that kind of like, we both had like similar burdens and like similar expectations. So we could both like always rely on each other and like just always gonna like be there. But I know that she's only got 2 years left to pursue advertising before she has to give up and actually find something financially stable. And it's heartbreaking, obviously, for me to hear that because I know how much of a great creative she is.
Who made that rule?
She's going to do it because she's been doing it for so long. But she has, like...
What do you mean? Where did 2 years come from? Where did the 2 years come from?
I don't know, but she just said to me, like, I think I can only carry on like trying to pursue this career for another 2 years before I actually kind of have to give in my dreams and find a more substantial way of earning money to like support my family.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot in there. I was kind of picking on the 2 years and the fact that you use the word financially stable. Advertising is not a stable industry. I mean, the brains who do it, they're not stable brains, according to psychology, for the most part. Some of you are, but you wouldn't be listening to this. And then financially and from a group, it's not a stable industry and you've got to work out how to survive through it. But I was just jumping on you a little bit to hear about that two-year thing. Because sometimes we set these... you know, off 25, you know, like let's say you're a young rapper, a young MC and you're like, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot till I'm 25. Why 25? Why not at least 25 and a half? And then if you're going to give yourself another half year, why not 26? And if you're going to do that, why not 34? Like it's all made up, right? And I get that it's weird to hear that from potentially an older person. But the thing is, it is all made up. And yes, okay, some people have huge college debt and dependents and have to take care of parents and all kinds of other stuff. That exists too. But a lot of this other stuff's made up. And it's just funny to hear how we all make these rules up for ourselves and our families make them up and they pass them on. And then you're like, hang on, no, this is real. Like, at some point I'm going to die. I was born. I'm going to eat some stuff, maybe, you know, love some people along the way. Is there another way to live? Is there another way to live while also feeding me and my loved ones? So, yeah, it's funny. So, yeah, the pressure to find a partner is interesting. I feel like in the past decade or two, there's been more appreciation for the solo person in a creative department who might come in as a freelancer, or perhaps the agency will pair them. But I think there can also be a bit of suspicion and mistrust around that, because perhaps like the pairing won't work out and then the agency has to put more work into making it work, as opposed to, look, just you go work it out. What do you have a personal point of view on that? Do you think that's, I'll use the word fair, and you don't have to bite at the word fair, but do you think that's a fair point of view, that if you want to be a writer or an art director in advertising, that you need to pair up with someone before you can actually get a job?
I actually had this discussion with someone the other day, and I felt very passionate about this, but I don't think it's a fair point, because, like, for starters, what type of industry hires you on a pair basis? Like, can you imagine hiring a doctor and be like, okay, yeah, you want to be a doctor, but first, you know, you're gonna have to find a nurse for your partner, and then we can hire you? But it's like, you don't, like, it doesn't work like that in other industries. So why is it in our particular industry are we kind of forcing creatives to, like, find someone that literally their, like, career, their, like, financial income, their aspirations, it all depends on that person, and they could change their mind one day, and then you'd be fucked. Like, if an agency wasn't understanding enough to let you carry on there as a solo, like, all the hard work, all the effort you have made, like, all the sacrifices for you to get to that point is, like, gone in, like, the blink of an eye. And that is solely because, like, you are dependent on another pair to be hired, which, again, I'm like, what?
How has it been justified to you? What's the point of view?
I think it just comes down to, like, when you go into an agency, obviously, I think they do want you to kind of get, like, I don't know what the saying is, hit the ground running in a way from the get-go. And I actually recently read an article by a director from The Gate, and he was mentioning how we should put, like, less expectations on juniors having experiences. This is just a junior role. Why are we saying that they need to have, you know, 1 to 2 years experience already? They need to, like, achieve this. They need to have had this award. And when I was reading through, I was like, yeah, actually, that's so true. Because I noticed that when I was looking at job openings, potentially if I wasn't in a pair. I think that kind of carries on to the way that we hire creators, in a way that we're kind of expecting, you know, if you're a solo, maybe you don't have enough ideas, or maybe you won't be able to think as well, think as fast, produce as much work. But personally, like, why would you not hire? Like, I think Ogilvy does the pipe program where then they hire, like, a bunch of juniors, and then you can work with each other. You're not set in a pair either. And I'm like, well, surely it makes more sense to hire a load of juniors, like, not force them to be a pair. I mean, they can come in a pair, but, like, keep it open for people. And then, because you've got, you know, like, a certain number of juniors available, and the different combinations, like, different types of pairs might work on different briefs. So, like, say, like, one, I don't know, like, sometimes in a pair, you can be a bit restrained. Obviously, working with the same person day in, day out, it does get mentally draining, and it does get emotionally draining as well. So surely if you have a different combination of people that you can put together, you'd be bringing out different combinations of work and different perspectives. In my, like, view,
potentially. So, I think the counter argument to some of that is that there's going to be some kind of chemistry, and if you can tolerate each other for a period of time, you're going to be a safer bet for the agency, and they're hiring two people, they need two people. So I can kind of understand both points of view. I mean, it must feel in some ways that you have to deal with this very complicated set of IKEA instructions to even get a foot in the door, right? You've got to have a portfolio that's got to be good. I think that's totally reasonable. I think if you want to do creative work and you don't have a body of work, just don't blame the system. Just get your freaking body of work together.
Agreed.
University, or it could be through life, but you need a body of work. You don't just get like a free job without putting any effort in. So you need that body of work. And then for you, you need a partner, and you probably need a vibe with that partner. You need to be able to move and be able to afford to live in a different city. You need to have contacts to get in the door. You need to have so many things going for you that it must feel quite intense. And I guess that has led you to writing about it, right? So in this article, Young, Broken, Hungry, How Can Advertising Improve the Way It Recruits Juniors After COVID-19? The second word in this article is the word London, and you've already brought it up. The question with that is, do you feel that you can only have a legitimate advertising career in the UK in London?
I would say probably like not. Like you can probably do start elsewhere. Originally, when I was going for university, I actually didn't want to go to London. I was very much anti-London. It was only when I went down for book crits that I realised, I don't know, you know when you go to a place, you go to a city and then like you get a vibe off that place, you get like a good feeling. I had a really good gut feeling there and I kind of just knew that that was where I was meant to be. Whether that's naive of me or not, I'm very much like a go big or go home person. In my personal experience, in London, you do have more connections there. There's a lot more alumni from my university that are there, and they are a very good point of contact. So if I was to try and go to Manchester or like Birmingham, I'd have to like research twice as hard, trying to connect with people like twice as more, because I simply just don't know like enough people there. Whereas in London, like I could easily say if I was in London for the day, like, and I had an hour spare, I could easily think of like five people to hit up, be like, hey, are you free for a book crit? Like, do you mind if I come in? And they'll be like, yeah, sure. So that adds to it is the fact that a lot of my network base and a lot of like the universe, like when we were going for uni, we were pushed to go to a lot of trips in London as well. I know now, I think a lot more universities are trying to like push students, like well, more open-minded to like other cities. But predominantly when you, like when I was at Lincoln, they were very much kind of focused it mainly on London. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why in my head I was like, yeah, London is the be all and the end all. But and when you like when you, we have people doing talks as well, a lot of them are from London. So you're like, automatically in your head, you're like, oh, okay, all these professionals have like, you know, made their careers in London. Like that is where I need to be.
There's saw this research the other day. I was just looking it up as you were talking. It's on centerforlondon.org. And it says that, and this is slightly different dynamic to some places in the world, but usually a handful of major cities have most of the creative sector employment. So according to centerforlondon.org, London accounts for, wait for this, more than 40% of creative sector employment in the UK and a third of all its businesses in that sector. And that's broadly speaking, that's, you know, advertising is a small part of that. So it would make sense that not only do you have 40% of the creative sector in the UK, but you probably have most of the national media based in London as well. And so that's going to make you think that you have to go there. But the flip way of looking at that is like, well, 60% of the creative sector employment in the UK is not based in London. And maybe that's a way in. You know, is part of your frustration right now, is it really London centric? Would you feel that you're giving up on something? Would you feel that you're failing if you don't get your first job in advertising in London?
I guess that would depend on how ambitious a creative is. As a very ambitious individual anyway, for me personally, I would say kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just purely because what I've kind of said it to myself in a way that, yeah, someone said to me, like, once you work in agencies in London, you're more likely to be hired like elsewhere, just mm-hmm. because London does have a very good reputation for the agency you work there. So say if you want to go abroad, and that's where I do want to work abroad, like eventually in the future, a lot more agencies like will be known if they're from London than say if they were from like Leeds or like Sheffield and Nottingham, like more lesser cities. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows in the world anyway that London is a creative hub. And to say that you made it there in London, like that is a very big statement to the world that like, mm-hmm. hey, I've actually made it in London now. And that was my first ever role there. I think that it does put out kind of like a reputation.
But you're obviously a very intelligent person. Obviously the siren call of London is an important one, but as you're also communicating a big sense of ego with that as well. And ego is great for creativity and great for ambition. And sometimes it's going to trip you over when you're not looking as well, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like you're teaching me to be humble as well, like to be wise.
Oh, I'm feeling the energy, Mickey Jones. I'm feeling the energy. I'm just pushing it around.
I think what else, like I did have something else I was going to say. So also my partner, it actually also depends on your partner, where they're based. So my partner's based in Cambridge, and kind of like one of the conditions of us being partners is like, she does want to make it in London as well. So obviously it's not just my needs on the line, it's her needs on the line. And she's been out of the game for a year now as a solo. So I can't imagine how hard it is. Actually it's her second year now as like not being in London after she's graduated. So in a way, like I think we're both very, very eager to make our way there ASAP.
Look, and I've spoken to people in London and people who've wanted to go to London, and there is often in those conversations, people will express that there's a sense of bias towards people who weren't born in London or who didn't go to certain universities in England and who don't have parents who can afford to put them up in an apartment in London. There are definitely things going on in that system. And I think a lot of the people who run, well, at least I speak largely to people who run strategy departments in London. And I think most of them, they might have benefited from it, but they're aware of it. And so you see interesting programs popping up at BBH in London, for example, to try to make the industry more accessible. They know they're missing out on talent. It's tough because London's not a cheap city. And you talk about this in your article, and that sort of, you got this point about how there's two things that kind of come together, is that you said that you were told during a portfolio review to lie about your current address. What was going on?
I obviously don't want to mention any names, and I love the directors that we had, like that creator. They're really, really great individuals, and I absolutely love them. That's why I said, like, I've said to people who have actually treated me like that particular line, they were like, what? And I was like, you got to understand that I have no hate towards them, and like, there is no animosity. And I know for a fact that like, they've worked their ass off to be where they are.
Totally.
And they said it to my partner and I, as kind of like an advice, not as in like, you know, oh, you have to lie about this. It's more like, just so you know, like, you know, we face prejudice too when we're trying to break into the industry. Like, we like lied through our, we faked it till we made it. So like, we want you to do really well as well. So like, just taking advice from us, I'm like, you know, do what you will with it. But I would say lie about where your location is, lie about when you're going to be available, and just take any opportunities. I think that was what they were trying to convey. But obviously when I was writing out an article, I didn't think much of it because obviously I knew the individuals that gave me that advice, and I have no animosity towards them. But when people were rereading, like editing my article with me, they were like, oh my God, like that statement was like the most powerful thing out of your whole article. And I was like, are you sure? So I guess I've placed it strategically in a way that it would grab your attention, but like, it's not.
Yeah. Well, the language here, because I want to pick on this, because here's the deal. The thing is, I just said to you, I asked you a question just now about whether you need to start your career in London, because there's a difference between making it in London and starting a career in London. You take those words, put them on a piece of paper and say, this guy challenged my opinion about needing to start and make my career in London, and there's a sense of anger in it. People will be like, yeah, but that's not actually how I said it or what my intention was. I was just pushing you around. This is written, for example, during a portfolio review, I was advised to lie about my current address. That is not written in a way that says these other people kind of cheated their way in and they said I should also cheat my way in. That's a very, you're trying to tap into a different emotion there, and your editors would have known that. I'm just saying, Mickey Jones, because I have a feeling you've got a few more articles coming. Now, if you were to lie about your current address, which part of London would you choose?
Oh my God, I love Clapham. Absolutely love it. So nice though. I think me and my partner stayed there twice at two different Airbnbs, and like, we got on really well with one of our hosts, and we're like, please adopt us, you know, like, we really want to move here, like, will you adopt us one day? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we look like, and all my friends are kind of like near Clapham area as well, so okay. I love Clapham. All yeah, right.
And you think that with I guess the people advising you would say, would they think that Clapham would get you into more doors than not?
I mean, just as long as you're near the hub, I think anywhere will do, whether you're in zone one or zone six.
All right, cool. Now, obviously you're into numbers as well, according to your article. Why don't you break down some of the costs that it would take for someone like yourself to go to London to do job interviews? How much?
So if I was staying for a week, it will cost me around £250. Like, well, I say a week is like 3 to 4 days. If I was lucky, I'd be able to couch surf my friend's place. So then that would reduce the price down. But even then, like, paying for tube, food, accommodation, I think my train ticket to London alone from where I live is £50 to £70, depending on if it was on peak, off peak.
Okay. And I think I think that's about $80 to $100 for the American listeners out there. Okay. So definitely not cheap. I remember when I came out of university, I think I was surviving on $150 Australian a week, which back then would have been about £5.
Oh my God.
I know, it would have been more than that. It would have been about £60. This is 20 years ago. It would have been £60. Also, it's not useful when someone 20 plus years older than you reflects about that, because it has nothing to do with your lived experience, Mickey Jones, and I'm all here for your lived experience. Okay, so you would need a better address. You would need 250 to 300 pounds to get 3 to 4 days in London, and that assumes that you can line up meetings with people. And as a junior, you might not be able to. Like, if you're coming into a city with a bit of a reputation, you could probably go, "Look, I'm going to be in London for 4 days. Can we get that meeting happening?" And more, it'd be more likely for that person to get access within a short period of time to others, right? So you would also have to play a bit of a calendar game here. We'd also need you break down some of the costs involved with having, you know, a portfolio, website, and then subscriptions to Adobe software. What's that going to run?
Which is not cheap, by the way. Let me just clarify that now. Yep. I literally only just recently found a cheap way to get like 2 months for free during COVID-19. So that literally saved my bank.
Yeah. Again, it's your lived experience, but I recently got a subscription as well. And I'm like, oh man, I'm 20 years into this. And I've usually just used free/hacked software. Don't tell anyone. And I'm like, I got to pay that much. Oh, come on. And you know, I've been around for a while, but I don't know, you know, yeah, nothing else to say. All right. So what about even getting attention from where you are? You know, do you really feel that without that address, without that Clapham address, that your CV and portfolio won't even get looked at? That unless you're in the city, you won't even get looked at, and that you would need to physically be present?
In a way, yeah, definitely, for sure. Because if I emailed a team and last minute they cancelled, but they're like, "Hey, you know, are you free the next day at like say 9 a.m. something?" And I was only there for 1 or 2 days. I missed the opportunity to go and see a team, which could potentially have led me on to. Do you mean like maybe it's all about being at the right time and at the right place? And if you can't take all the opportunities available to you purely because of where you geographically based, then it is going to reduce your chances. I mean, it's hard enough trying to break into the industry as it is, never mind not being where it's actually happening.
Okay.
So yeah, for sure.
What do you think the starting salary would be? Give me a range, because you know I don't want to make it. What would your starting salary be for you and your partner each?
I think a lot of the decent agencies, what agencies that I would want to work at, have signed on to the Placement Poverty Pledge in the UK. So that's set by the Young Creative Council, which means that they have to pay us a London Living Wage. And if they keep us on for 3 months, like after 3 months, and don't hire us, they have to pay us a freelancer's wage. So starting salary wise, I'm not too worried, because it has improved a lot and there has a lot like been done to make sure that, you know, the wages are maintained. But when I did email a couple of editors this article, they emailed me back and they shared an experience. They were saying how they actually think junior starting salaries are starting to stagnate again. And I think obviously after COVID-19, people are going to struggle with prices are going to be rising. And I guess it depends on if the country goes into recession, but obviously if it does, or if there's going to, you know, the fallout of this is going to last for the next, I would say, 5 years.
Yeah.
And our salaries are still staying the same, then that is going to be an issue.
I think in general, advertising agency salaries have stagnated for at least a decade or two. I know that if you're in a really big role now, you're definitely earning less money than you've. Why am I saying definitely? I've not seen numbers. I've just had conversations with people, but you'd be, even if you're on a plush salary, there's plush salaries.
Yeah.
For most people, would be less than the generation before them, while that generation would have had fewer projects and less work to do. So you would obviously have to relocate.
Yeah.
Are the types of opportunities that you could get offered if you were there for the interviews and you got offered something, are they like you're going to have a 3 month stint, and if you get through, we'll offer you a job? Is that the deal, or could you actually get a full time job?
I wouldn't be able to go straight into advertising and get fully hired like from the get-go, unless we did I think BBHU, they don't hire from placements, that like you have to go through kind of like a whole interview process and then you get picked at the end and it's kind of like confirmed. Ogilvy did the same, but I think the internship's only for 9 months, so even after the 9 months, you're not guaranteed a job. But yeah, it would happen for you to be hired straight away. You need to do like quite a few placements before you get hired. I've known a team who I always go back to for feedback. And they're still juniors, even though I feel like they're way above junior level now. They've been doing placements for 2 years, like 2 years just on placements. And their work is sick. Like they won so many awards and everything. And it goes to show that no matter how talented you are as well, yeah, sometimes it doesn't work out how you want it to. Sometimes it could take, I think in my head, I've kind of said to myself, like, I know that this is going to be a long game, but I am the type of person that I love, like, the industry and, like, the profession so much. Well, I think I love it so much until I get into it, that I am willing to sacrifice however long it takes me to get to where I want to be. But I think for other individuals who have obviously have more pressing matters, or maybe they have medical conditions, that means that perhaps in 5 to 10 years time, they won't be functioning as well as it could be. I think that definitely needs to be discussed. Or yeah, people who unexpected situations just like occur, they don't have the luxury of time to wait it out and see how long they get hired for. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And with some of these things, I think there's a word proximity that summarizes some of these things. And it's not just geographic as in between cities, but there's research about how opportunity tends to happen if you're near it. And that, you know, and that's, I think, research that's happened looking at, I think, parts of the US where underprivileged people have been grouped together in ways where they're miles away from people who have more fortunate lives, and that
definitely this. I live in one of those places like where, like, even where you live now, like if you don't have a car you can't get a job, but then you can't get a job, like, yeah, so you can't get a car, like you can't get a job if you don't have a car, but then you can't get the job if you don't have the car. Do you know what I mean? It's catch 22.
There's another cycle which even comes before that, which is, and I hear people debate it, and it's that, well, if I don't see people like me in those roles, then who am I to seek out that role? And then the thing before that is, like, I didn't even know that industry or that role existed. So there is a gauntlet run of things that you have to get in place before you or someone like you could even have a run at London. And then the proximity thing will even appear when you're in a building in London, that, you know, you happen to walk past someone, you were near them and you heard a little news about a pitch, you got on the pitch and then you got something through and boom. So there is a lot of proximity, a lot of hard work at times, and then there is a lot of luck. And yes, some people will have a little bit more of that because they've grown up that way. They expect it. And there's a ton of research on these things as well, but it's I feel for you. It's complicated. And at the same time, I think you'll probably hear from a lot of people who are older than you, like me, that yes, it's difficult, and let's hope that it changes, and that let's see what we can do as individuals to fix it. And then industry organizations, please step up. People who are running big companies, please step up. And at the same time, I believe that you've also, if you're a creative individual, you need to work out how to be relatively prolific anyway, because your article, for example, that's a beautiful little bat signal. And then you follow up with another one. And then maybe you do some weird project that you do on the weekends if you've got time. Now, I know you're not necessarily working in the cafe, but like if you've got a bit of time, and a lot of people don't have that time. But it's this weird universe of emotion and frustration and things that are true and that are systematically or systemically against you. And yet you've got to try to work out how to get in and then stay fresh, do good work, and bring people through. What do you think are the main things that need to change for people in your situation that you believe have talent, that you believe have good work ethic, you've got something to contribute to the industry? What do you think needs to happen specifically in the UK to get more of you into the industry?
Well, I think one of the first things I mentioned in the article was embrace more virtual networking, like ways of networking, like and also more flexible approaches to work. I think after this, no one can argue that you can't work from home, or you can't do things through a webinar, you can't get interviewed for a phone call, because we fucking have been doing it for the past month and people are still getting hired, people are still doing work at home, you know, people are still being productive, like they're still coming up with ideas. So definitely approaching a more virtual outreach to talent. Like, I was lucky enough to be mentored by someone from Amsterdam, because someone decided to set up a virtual mentorship scheme, because we can't like get to anybody at the moment during COVID-19. And if COVID-19 never happened, that would never happen, which means my article would have actually never happened if it wasn't for my mentor telling me that I had a valid point to make. So yeah, I would say that definitely. Okay. And then also, this is not just for me, and I'm not attacking the industry in any way. When I was speaking to quite a few creators, a lot of people have said, if you're an agency or if you're an organization and you're doing talk about diversity and you're doing talk about change, like, you need to look at the people who are delivering these talks. If you talk about diversity and you've got a white male delivering these talks, that does not send a good message out to BAME creators or female creators trying to break into the industry. Because it's like, well, funnily enough, like, why are you not having someone who looks like me, like, delivering talk, who knows my, like, issues, who knows my barriers? Mm-hmm. So get someone who has actually been through, like, the hoops and hurdles and who understands where all these creators are coming from to, like, deliver these talks, because then you're building a better rapport, and also they'd just be able to talk in a language that would hit home to a lot of like creators who face these issues. And I mean, I've gone off on a tangent now, so I can't even remember what the point I was going to make.
I think you were just trying to fix everything. That was the question. How do you fix all of this?
How do you fix everything?
Not having worked in the industry, how do you fix all of this, Mickey Jones?
Just talking more. Honestly, like we're a social industry. We're an industry that's meant to be, you're advertising to people, like people of all backgrounds or ethnicities or like social standing. So talk more. Like, I don't think people are talking enough, and I don't think people are reaching out enough. If you want to improve, like, diversity, if you want to improve more, like, you know, female creators coming into the industry, like, you need to ask yourself, what are you actually doing? And is it actually, like, how much percentage of that is actually hiring in, like, your target, wherever it is that needs to, like, make the industry more balanced, and assessing whether or not, you know, are those actions actually doing anything, or is it more like a PR stunt for you to look good? Because I think a lot of the time it's like greenwashing, like people, you know, want to jump on the bandwagon like diversity and equality, but it's like, well, no, you're talking about it, but I don't see you doing anything about it.
Interesting.
I felt like that was not good. Attacking.
I think we're going to fix it. Look, here's the deal, right? I think it's totally fine to have points of view that to someone will sound like a criticism, but are actually constructive points of view. And the thing is, when you work in this industry for any period of time, and you go to talk to a client, you're like, here's the problem we need to solve. And if that client's like, we don't have problems, that's negative. You're criticizing me. We are perfect. We just want to sell more stuff. You're not going to have a good relationship. So this industry, out of all industries that's supposed to deal with like nuance and empathy and things like that, we should be better at having this kind of conversation. And you should not feel that in what you're saying, you're criticizing anyone. And also there are different types of criticism. So on the one hand, what you're talking about is kind of a social criticism, but you're not like, you guys suck and I hate you and everyone should hate you. You're just like, here are some things that could be better and they could be better for more people. We've got to hold these ideas in our head a little bit differently. And like the other thing that I would say is with all the push for positive change in the industry, I think people who are fighting for it, you got to fight for the topics and not against the people, because there are people that you're going to point fingers at least in your head, because heads can point fingers, you know, through the cancel culture and through criticizing like middle-aged white dudes, for example. I'm totally available for criticism, by the way, as because you know what, I'm a pre-middle-aged white dude. But like, as soon as that happens, as soon as you do that, the brain closes down and it's like, you've othered that person while trying to stand up for your sense of otherness. The thing is common ground. I really do believe in this, and I totally understand people who are more extreme in their activism, where they're like, you know what, you had your time, you had thousands of years, totally valid. And I don't even mean to get caught up in this being about a middle-aged white thing. It's just like, as soon as any group of people that's trying to affect positive change points out a group that's in there, that group will buckle down. Just look at some of the presidents and prime ministers around the world right now. As soon as you shame them or point at them, they fight back. And so the point that I'm really making here isn't about race or anything. It's really about like, we should be able to find more common ground. We should be more open to positive change. I think that's why articles like yours are critical. They're deeply important. I hope you don't just immediately turn into a trade industry journalist. It could be tempting. You're like, oh, I could earn 10 pounds. What do you get? 10 pounds for an article? No, I'm joking. But I think it's valid. And because the other thing is, a lot of people who enter these creative departments can often get shamed out of writing articles like the one you wrote, because it's either too controversial or that's not what creatives do. So my rant is coming out in a slightly patronizing, patriarchal way, but
I totally get where you're coming from. I feel like we're both learning from each other, because obviously different age group, completely different backgrounds in a way.
How else are we different? I'm joking. Don't worry. You don't know me. You don't know me. But it's great.
I feel like I'm learning a lot from you though, as well. Just like talk, like from where you're coming from, because then I know that at least where like future, like my future bosses are coming forward and saying these particular things, I won't take it to heart. I won't be like, oh my gosh, like you're attacking me. Like you don't actually appreciate, you know, like you don't want to hire more people from like diverse backgrounds, but I completely get where you're coming from.
Challenge with this topic is you would probably need a book to write down exactly what you think in a way that it cannot get misquoted or taken apart, right? So, you know, my bias is that I want other people to succeed. And I think about that a lot because we're wired for competition as humans, let alone in this industry, trying to get a job or competing with each other to win a pitch or for a promotion. Like there's competition going on, or even on the internet. You know, you mentioned earlier when we logged on that the numbers posts were up, and it's like we're competitive, right? But at the same time, I go, no, hang on. I don't have to win at other people's expense. I do want other people to win. I don't just say that. I actually believe it and mean it in a really deep way. But not everyone's like that. You will come across people in the industry who are, maybe I'm an asshole, but who are total assholes and who don't have empathy and who see themselves as predator and their employees as victim, or they see themselves as operator and they see their employees as people to extract value from, and that's it. That's the deal. There's no nuance there. So My plea, even though I've now turned this into a second or third rant, is to have adult conversations where they're fact-based, there's some intuitive leap, you listen, you find the common ground. I'll often misspeak in these interactions. I get nervous I'm going to say the wrong thing, such as during a portfolio review, I was advised to lie about my current address. Assholes! I'm joking. It's really easy to kind of paraphrase people in a way that can trigger outrage. And I don't think I don't think the outrage stuff is, you know what? Sometimes it's good for creativity, but it's not entirely useful. I have a feeling you got a few more articles in you. What's your next piece?
I think definitely what I was talking about before about being more open-minded to solo creatives and not forcing them to be in a pair for sure. Mm. That's definitely one. And then another one, is a topic actually quite close to me as well, is how can the workplace be more Spurges friendly, because my little brother, he's got autism. Mm-hmm. And like growing up, I attended quite a few lectures so actually in university from autistic students about how university isn't actually an autism friendly place. Mm. And I'm like, they're not saying, you know, like, why are you not catering to us? And that it's more like everybody deserves the same chances in life and everybody deserves the same educations and the same opportunities. I think at the moment, there isn't a lot of talk about hiring more disabled, hidden, like whether you're physically disabled or having hidden disabilities in advertising. I've yet to actually meet someone who is on the spectrum in advertising. And I would like to think that if I get good in this industry and have like the power to make change, I would like to think that one day when I run my own agency, yeah, is a welcome place for all creatives and dogs for all
awesome
creatives.
Awesome. I love that. It'd be really interesting. Like, have you thought about using the nonfiction writing that it seems that you're going to do more of as a way to kind of get your thoughts together and then to pop out something that might be like a fictitious project that brings it to life? That could be like a really...
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think when I... Build. Yeah, like when I was like writing this, I was like, I knew that I didn't want to leave out as an article. So I was like, how can I... Mm. What else can I do to make it more of a call to action, to make it so that people can't back down from it and like they have to sign onto something so that they have to follow through the changes. And then I was thinking, oh, okay, well, if I'm able to talk about a topic that I'm currently experiencing, maybe I could help other people talk about topics that maybe even I don't know about, and it'd be great for me to learn. Kind of like documentary style, I guess, writing.
Totally.
Which is what I love, because I love like learning about people and cultures, so...
I love it. Okay, yeah, I hope you do that. And I'd love to have a chat with you in the future once you're running your agency, but maybe we do a chat in between now and you running your agency. you know, it'd be great.
I was actually sat in my bed the other day thinking like, what would the agency be called, Mickey? Like, who would you hire? And like, what is going to be your ethos? And I was like, oh shit, that's so much to think about.
No, but it's good. It's good. And look, you know this, you're obviously ambitious. High expectations are important. Again, I'm a nerd. I need a few minutes to dig it up, but there's research about high expectations and proximity as well as luck being this weird Venn diagram of things that will help make a career, and that career won't be stable. It won't go up in a line, in a weird trajectory line, or it won't go up in like a curve. Whoop, whoop, we're amazing. It's going to go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And so will your life. The thing is to keep at it and keep trying to keep in touch with what you're about. And, that's what your writing is obviously doing for you. And it's been great to chat to you. Next time, let's have a chat about your creative work, not just your amazing abilities at observation.
Oh, thanks.
I felt I needed to make up for my rant, but I mean it. No, it's good. And yeah, best wishes to everything. If people want to find you on the internet, where's the best place to look?
My LinkedIn is Mickey Jones, and I'm quite active on Twitter as well. It's pickme underscore at Mickey. M-I-C-K-E-Y, by the way, like the mouse.
Awesome. All right, Mickey. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Sweathead today.
Thank you for having me. It's been great talking to you.
Peace.